It's awesome if you have like three people in your team of 400 who are really into AI, but the profound changes come when you develop that capacity as an organization or a team. By the time you're implemented, like the robots have fully taken over and humans are just like meat sacks that sit on a shelf as batteries, right? The reality is the vast majority of people are still just dipping their toes in the water while other people are really, you know, swimming in a new ocean.
Welcome to Future Work, the podcast about a happier future of work and the role of people and technology within that. In today's episode, we explore the transformative role of AI with my first return guest, Dr. Alexandra Samuel. Since our last discussion, AI has not only advanced in capabilities, but also in how it's integrated into our daily workflows and organizational structures. We'll delve into how AI is transforming how we work, what our relationship with AI should be, the differing speeds at which it's being adopted even just within one company, and what you as a business leader should do to successfully bring AI to your organization. So let's dive in. This episode is brought to you by Deel. Looking to hire employees globally? Choose Deel, the global first HR and payroll platform operating in over 100 countries. Simplify hiring, payroll, and compliance all on one single platform. Deel's in-house legal experts ensure continuous compliance and unmatched data security, making international employment effortless. Customers praise the platform for its intuitive design and robust support, earning over 3,000 positive reviews. If you're ready to expand your team worldwide with ease, visit flexos.org/deel to book a demo today. flexos.org/DEEL to book a demo today. Thanks so much to the wonderful team at Deel for making FlexOS's mission of a happier future of work possible. And now onto the podcast. Alex, thanks so much for being on again.
Thank you so much for having me. It's fun to be back.
So we talked about 6 months ago and you're actually the first return guest on the podcast. Because when we talked 6 months ago, I was really focused on your book behind you, which is Remote Inc. And I was thinking about talking about hybrid work and remote work and the four-day work week. And we did talk about all of that, but then we started talking about AI. And it really changed my point of view completely. I was kind of interested in AI and I was playing with AI. But the way you described how AI could eventually take over a lot of our work and maybe a little bit more than what we would hope for, it really changed my thinking. I started researching it a lot more. It's 6 months. A lot obviously has changed since then. AI is developing very rapidly. We're actually recording this right after OpenAI did their demo day and announced a bunch of new features. So where do we stand with AI today?
In some ways, it's changed a lot. In some ways, it's changed very little because the reality is the vast majority of people are still just dipping their toes in the water while other people are really, you know, swimming in a new ocean. And I think what we need to get our minds around at this juncture is, you know, yes, some of us are using AI in our day-to-day working lives. We're really changing what we can accomplish. We're thinking in new ways. We're taking on, you know, wildly ambitious projects that used to be out of reach, possibly increasing our productivity, our output in really significant ways. Other people are, you know, using it a little here and there, you know, correcting some spelling mistakes. and, you know, the challenge with, you know, I see so many surveys that ask, try and measure where we are in AI adoption and the results are all over the place because you can ask someone if they use AI. Well, first of all, I mean, ask people if they use AI and, you know, half of the people you ask might say no, 100% or 99% actually do use AI. They just don't think of it as AI. They don't think about Google being AI. They don't think about Gmail being, run with AI. You know, unless you really ask people more nuanced questions and some sort of skill testing questions, you don't really know where they're at. And so in this way, the path to AI adoption is not that different from what we've seen with like many other waves of tech adoption in the workplace, which is you have some people who are like, everything's changing. I'm one of those people, obviously. Everything's changing. All this is amazing. We're going to do all this great stuff, you know, and then we kind of have to sit back and wait for the rest of the workplace to catch up. Because at the end of the day, you know, when you're in an organization, it's awesome if you have like three people in your team of 400 who are really into AI, but the profound changes come when you develop that capacity as an organization or a team.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've seen some data, and I totally agree with you that the data is extremely inconsistent from survey to survey, and it's very difficult to really get a firm understanding of what it means. And also because a lot of those surveys are done by the tech companies trying to sell AI. So when Microsoft out with their big study saying that AI is the future based on their data, and obviously we have to remember that they have some incentive to push AI. But when you're looking at it from an individual level, so there's already like a pretty big gap starting to develop. Then you look at it at a team level, then you look at it at an organizational level. One of the things that did come out of the Microsoft study is that a lot of people are now BYO AI, bringing their own AI to work, because companies are not providing AI tools. They may not have developed a framework. They may not have developed an adoption plan. So we saw recently two really interesting case studies, right? One was from Moderna, who did a very deep partnership with OpenAI. One was from Microsoft themselves and how they're applying it in HR. And in both of those case studies, they actually say it's not so much about creating some like huge AI initiative or thing at a company level. It's actually letting individual people experiment more with AI, letting them test it out, and finding in which ways AI can automate their workflows or, you know, change or improve how they work. And that really reminded me of what you said 6 months ago, which is that actually the smart bosses, what they really should do is just give people more time for experimentation.
Yeah.
So is that where you still stand, that people just need to experiment more? But also, what can then companies do to create that space?
I think at this time in most organizations, that is the most realistic approach. For a couple of reasons. One is the technology is changing too quickly. I mean, witness today's announcement, right? Like, so you could develop, I mean, you know how companies work. If you do like a traditional systems integration, you spend 6 months or a year gathering requirements, talking with everyone on the team, figuring out what systems are going to work for everyone. Then you make your recommendations. Then you have like a change management practice. And 2.5 years later, by the time you're implemented, like the robots have fully taken over and humans are just like meat sacks that sit on a shelf as batteries, right? Like there's no point. So part of it is just the pace of change. And then I think the other problem, and this is, you know, again, tied up with organizational structures, is that, you know, ideally you would find something in the middle, right? Ideally you would say, look, we've got all these great people who are ready to experiment. We've got some people who maybe are not so ready to experiment. Let's see if we can find a couple of teams where most people are game and have the team innovate together and talk about what pieces they're going to do together, you know, because I think some of the gains really do come from some agreements about what things we're going to automate. I'll give you an example, actually. I love this example. It happened totally by accident. So a few weeks ago, I was bringing a colleague up to speed. I'd been asked to hand over a big piece of a project I'd been working on for a couple months to somebody else on the team. And I needed to get her up to speed. So I did what I always do in that circumstance, especially because we were like in very different time zones. I took 3 email threads that had accumulated over like 6 weeks, where so you could pretty much the whole story of the project was in these three email threads. You know, one was the external one with the client, one was an internal one within like the project team, and another was like a technical thread with an engineering team. And so they were pretty long threads, but I was like, okay, here we go. So I just forwarded her the threads. And after I forwarded to her the threads, I thought about this exchange I'd had with a friend of mine on Facebook the previous weekend, where he had been complaining about the fact that he was in an organization where the practice is for his colleagues to just, people are constantly sending along PDFs like FYI, in case you're interested, of like this article or that resource. And he was like, this is so annoying. I have no idea. Like, why did they think I would find this interesting? And I said, you know, to him, this is where AI should be coming in. Like, people should be giving you the AI summary with the PDF so you can decide if it's worth your effort. And why should all 500 recipients do that if just one person can do the summary before sending it out?
Yeah.
So, of course, as soon as I'd send this thread to my colleague, I was like, oh, no, I'm like the bad colleague who didn't do their homework. So I took 5 minutes. I took the 3 email threads. I copied and pasted them into text files. I uploaded the 3 text files to ChatGPT. And then I actually gave it some instructions. I said, you know, you are a consultant. You're bringing a colleague up to speed on a project. Here are the 7 things, areas where she needs to know what's going on with the project. Read these email threads and summarize where we're at on these 7 fronts based on the email threads. So it did that. I looked at the summary. It was like pretty good. There was one thing it had left out. There was one thing it had gotten a little wrong. Anyhow, long story short, in less than 10 minutes, I had a really good memo bringing her up to speed on the project instead of these three email threads that she would have taken 2 hours to read and still been confused.
Yeah.
And so I give that example because to me, this is how we use AI as a team is much more important and has much more impact than what we do individually.
Yeah.
Because you need to create a culture where the norm is, hey, it's not up to the individual recipient to use the AI. It's actually the incremental tiny effort from the sender to use AI. We're just not going to do these obnoxious emails anymore. We're not going to do these FYIs. We're not going to do forward the whole thread.
Yeah.
We're going to do AI is going to make it possible to summarize the context. And so I think that's where we need to start establishing norms for our teams and organizations so that AI is not only legitimated, but expected, right? And it's like it's rude to send someone something without AIing it first.
And that's pretty much what the Moderna CEO said in the case study that they released with OpenAI. And again, similar to the studies from Microsoft, I know it's marketing, but it's I think it's very insightful in terms of how a big company in a very regulated industry like that can use AI. And one of the things that they said is that there's now a mandate that people have to use it 20 times per day or more. He said in Wall Street Journal, right? He said like no fewer than 20 times per day. And he said, once people get how easy it is and how much value it brings, they're more than happy to use it 20 times per day, right? It's not like telling kids to eat their vegetables. So what are some things, because you mentioned culture, and that was a really big part of his case study as well, was that it was really more about not just like understanding, but how do you build a culture in which people want to try and innovate and build those like small GPTs and change their workflows. Yep. Like how would you do it as a company leader today to go from, okay, maybe some people are individually using AI to that finally getting to like a team and company level?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a few things that you want to mandate or rather make possible and incentivize, right? One is you want to make it totally okay to spend part of your workday figuring out how to automate your own work. Second of all, you want to make it clear it's not cheating. There's nothing embarrassing about sending AI written stuff. Third of all, you want to create a culture where there's an expectation that you will fact check your AI written stuff, right? That that you're responsible for thinking about critically about what you're looking at and like, is this accurate? That's important. And then I think, you know, the most perhaps foundational piece of this is you need people to feel like their jobs are not at risk by doing this. Like you're not going to automate yourself out of work. And, you know, I think there's a lot of anxiety that people have around that. And then I should also say the other piece is that you need to put tools in place that address privacy, security, safety concerns around AI. So, you know, a question I get constantly is, aren't you worried about your your distinctiveness being added to the collective? Aren't you worried about having whatever you've put into the AI turned into the AI fodder? And the answer is, well, not that worried because I pay for a premium level of ChatGPT for that precise reason. I'm actually very selective about how I use, any AI I'm using regularly in any context where I have privacy or data protection concerns, I look at call me old fashioned, look at the terms of service. Now, could they still use my data and break their terms of service? Yes, it wouldn't be the first or the last time. Could a hacker get access to the data? Who knows? I mean, I have long since made the choice that I'm willing to accept some risk in return for using the cloud. Nobody's security is perfect.
Yeah.
People do yucky things in every tech company. But there's plenty to worry about with what companies tell you they're going to do. So I've decided if someone is saying they're not going to use my data, I'm going to, you know, take that legal agreement as binding. It is binding. And I'm going to pay to use tools that protect my data that way. And so companies need to pay for that, right? Like of course, people aren't going to want to use the free version of GPT if they think their ideas are going to get rolled back into the training model. You have to pay for them to have access in a more secure form.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's something here that everyone is worried about, which is what happens with that data. And I think you make a really good analogy, which is that this is also what we maybe went through when we shifted to the cloud, right? From local files in a computer to the cloud, there's obviously some risk. There can always be a cyber attack or some leak or something like that. But we kind of expect companies like Google and Microsoft and maybe now OpenAI to protect that data well, because they have a lot to lose if there was some like huge data breach, right? So what are some other things that you look at when you're assessing which tools to use? And when you're going through those privacy policies, what are some things that you look at when you're deciding what tools to put to your AI team?
Yeah, I mean, I think the path to integration with your existing tools is really important. One of the comments on my late, I just had this piece out in the journal today about everyday problems that an AI can solve for you at work. And somebody pointed out that all the tools I had mentioned were freestanding tools, and they found it was much more useful to be able to use AI in the context of their Microsoft suite. Now, with that in mind, I do think for most organizations, what you want to think about is like, what two or three tools can solve the largest number of use cases for the largest number of users? Because, you know, most people are not going to be me and use 20 different AI tools and also like hopefully pay for food.
Yes. And then obviously having to administer all of that and ensure the, again, like all the CIO concerns, that's going to be too much to handle, right? So you're saying look at like two or three suites of tools that would work. And so that would probably be either OpenAI Enterprise or the Microsoft suite. And then maybe something like for the marketing team, they would need, everyone is going to go either on Canva or they're all going to go on Adobe Cloud or something like that. Like, are you looking at those software suites?
I think most organizations at this point are, most people who reach out to me about AI tools at this point, for exactly the reasons you're saying, they're not making choices for their organization. They're personally deciding what two or three tools they're going to use. And and again, in the context of organizations, people get their Microsoft access through the enterprise. So their access to Microsoft AI depends on whether the company has turned it on.
Yeah.
And so when you're an individual user and you're not buying a corporate suite, you're not going to be looking at the $200, $500 a month tools. You're going to be looking at the $10 and $20 a month tools. And so I think for most people, that's going to mean choosing Claude or ChatGPT. I'm paying for both. You know, choosing, you know, Ideogram or Midjourney or DALL-E, like choosing an image generator. And then maybe choosing one tool that you're going to use for data if you do data work. The one thing I will say about adopting all the AI tools compared to, you know, I've been a chronic early adopter for, goodness me, 40 years. I just realized this year is my 40-year tech-iversary.
Wow.
And so what really makes AI different compared to all the other tools is it's self-teaching. It will teach you how to use it personally.
Yeah.
And tell you what to use it for. Like, you know, when I first sat down with, I'm going to just be very arcane here. When I first sat down with Edix Wordix, which was the first word processor I ever used in 1984, you know, it had this big fat manual in this like really weird, it was a very weird binder. It was in a binder that was sort of plastic quilting. And, you know, if you wanted to know how to do something, you're like flipping through the manual and the manual can't, the manual's for everybody. It's not written for a high school student. It's not written for a university professor. It's written for anyone who might be typing a document, which is like a pretty broad category. Yeah. Whereas with ChatGPT, I've given ChatGPT my life story, basically, right? I have a custom instruction that governs all my interactions. It knows who I am, where I live, what I do for a living, what it knows about my marriage, it knows my children, it knows like what software tools I use regularly. And so whenever I want to learn how to use it to do something new, it can calibrate its instructions exactly for me.
Wow. I think in that context, it would be amazing to hear maybe a little bit more about how you're personally using all these AI tools. So you're publishing pretty frequently now on LinkedIn, which I really appreciate. These posts of just like actual down to the ground, very simple workflows. And, you know, here's what I do with this tool and here's what prompt I use. So what are some of the ones that you see resonating most with people in terms of applying AI?
You know, it's so funny because the people I hear back from on this are the super nerds, right? Who are really into it, who are my people. And then I, you know, when I write these things for the journal where we're thinking about like the average person picking up a newspaper, I'm constantly reminded like, actually, you know, Alex, most people don't use XLOOKUP as a routine part of their working lives. So they don't really need to know how OpenAI or ChatGPT is going to make it easier to use XLOOKUP.
Yeah.
So, Teresa, I'm actually really trying to be diligent in sharing use cases at varying levels of nerdiness. And so I'll tell you one that has really resonated with a lot of people, which I find interesting, is my new habit of using, I'm going to actually fire it up because it's so bonkers until you try it, right? The voice interface for ChatGPT, like it is so, have you used it? Have you used the voice version of ChatGPT?
Yes.
Hi, you are a podcaster and you're interviewing somebody about AI and you want to hear their tips for how people should use AI on a day-to-day basis. What are three questions you might ask to get interesting and accessible but concrete answers on what you can do with AI?
Hi, that sounds like an exciting podcast episode. Here are three questions you could ask. One, can you share some practical ways individuals can integrate AI tools into their daily personal or professional tasks to improve efficiency or creativity? Two, what are some common misconceptions about using AI day to day that you think people should be aware of? Three, could you recommend any AI tools or platforms that are user-friendly for beginners and explain how they can get started with them? These questions should help uncover some useful insights and actionable tips for your listeners.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, Dad, I didn't mean to put you out of business.
You're so polite. You say thank you.
Oh my God, I always thank you. In fact, I want to tell you the story about my manicure in a second because it is a little crazy how concerned I am for the feelings of my AIs. One of the practices that I use now that seems to help other people is when I have something where I've just got like a bazillion ideas, I don't even know where to start, I'll go for a walk and I will set it up at the beginning by saying, starting a voice session. If I know there's a document I'm going to want to refer to, like say I did this recently when I was going to TED and I wanted to think about who I would try and interview at TED. I uploaded a list of all the TED speakers to a chat. Then I opened the chat from my phone and then I went out for a walk and I uploaded it to a custom GPT that already has a whole bunch of context on the kind of stories I read about. So I went for a walk and I was like, hi, I'm covering TED. I want to be able to decide which speakers to interview. Can you look at the bios of all the TED speakers and, you know, give me a list of the top 10 people who you think I might want to interview? Just give me a short summary. Just give me like the 3 to 5 words about each one. And it did that. Yeah. And by the time I got back from my walk, I had a sense of like, these are the three people who I wanted to interview and what I might want to speak to them about. And then it can give it to me as an outline. And I'll tell you, it was the funniest thing because when I was my first like 10 minutes of TED, I ran into this woman and she introduced herself to me. And I was like, oh, I had a long conversation with ChatGPT about you. She's like, what? and then I like pulled up the transcript and it was so funny because she was clearly so startled that I really had talked to the AI about her.
Amazing.
But, you know, for me, free form, or I'll just like throw a whole bunch of ideas into it. And then when I come back, I'll get it back as an outline. And for me, that's really helpful. That's become a really frequent part of my work.
And it's so different from using text, right? I think that's the part when I do our course and we take mostly executives through what they should know about AI, but mostly also how to apply it, right? So we help them build their AI team. Those are like the three most foundational things. Actually know how to prompt ChatGPT for as long as that is necessary, right? Give it context like you just did in terms of like, you are a this and this is what you should know and this is what I expect. Number two is just use the voice, right? Because you can now speak to it as a human and you can get that direct interaction. And number three is start just building some small agents. And suddenly you go from, I don't really know what AI is and I'm a little bit scared, to, whoa, this can do so much for me. And what I hear always from executives especially is that they feel so liberated. They always use that word because all of the things that they used to rely on other people on, and they have to always wait and they have to review and revise, like now all of a sudden they're doing the work again, and it really lightens people's days up. It's incredible.
It is. And I think I do want to just make one tech note, which is that I find the voice interface for ChatGPT quite erratic. It's weird, like it'll forget things even after it has fed it back to me. It will turn out that it's lost like 12 minutes of our conversation, and so I recommend as a practice to pause regularly and ask it to recap and like let it sort of stew. You might even take some screenshots of things that it said that you think are particularly useful. I don't really understand why it's so erratic, but I do find it very helpful.
And that may also go back to what we are hearing frequently, which is this is the worst that this technology is ever going to be, right? And so with the new demos that they just did in terms of the updated voice assistant, you know, those things may already been worked out, right? So this is that very first version that we're seeing right now. Just imagine where that is 6 to 12 months from today.
Yeah. So what you're watching on my face is I'm just thinking about that. There's actually something really special about those liminal moments. And I mean, I can go back 40 years and tell you, I remember the first time I used a mouse. I remember the first time I used a color printer. That was crazy. I remember the first time I Googled something from what was a device that was called the Trio, which was a sort of short-lived device. Wow, at a restaurant, and the people at the restaurant were like, what's going on? Like, you're looking something up and you're on your phone. Like, I don't even understand what's going on. I remember the first time it wasn't called Google yet. I did a live web search. I was a very early procurer of high speed internet. And so I had, you know, the shift between dial up and high speed was that you had the internet on all the time. And I remember having friends over. We got into an argument about a book character, and I came back with an answer, and they were all like, wait, how did you figure that out? And these are all things now that are, you know, completely woven into the texture of our lives. Looking something up, looking something up on your phone at a restaurant, using a mouse. And yet,
so normal.
I mean, of course, I'm a tech lover. So like, I really genuinely find those moments to be so magical. But I really hope I will remember. Okay, now let's talk about my fingernails, which is the most important thing.
Let's close out on the fingernails, yes.
Are we going to close on the fingernails?
Yes.
Well, it's a funny thing. It was my birthday like a week and a half ago, and I had this idea that, hey, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to do the AI manicure for my birthday. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to set 10 intentions for the next year. Five personal goals, five professional goals. And I'm going to come up with like a symbolic representation for each one and have them turn into nail art. I ended up spending probably an hour on ideogram for each individual image. So, for example, like I love the theater and I wanted to do a fingernail that would be like, I'm going to go to New York and see more shows this year. And so this looks like a playbill, which is like what the little magazines they give you. You know, it took a lot of playing around and iterating to get each fingernail the way I wanted it. And then eventually I had 10 images I was pretty happy with. And I just then at that point just used Canva to like drop them onto my hand, onto a plain picture of a hand. Uh-huh. And that way the poor nail artist, when I walked in, I had a very clear roadmap of what I wanted. She did an amazing job of translating it. It looks exactly like the mock-up. And the thing that was really interesting, and the reason I bring it up apropos of this magic thing, is like, this is a bonkers thing to do. Like, like, first of all, I just told you, I have a manicure like once every 5 years. So the idea that I've spent like literally 50 hours in the past 6 months figuring out my fingernails is like ridiculous. Except I'm going to remember this forever, right? Like, thing of wanting to, and the process was amazing. Like, I learned all these different, I learned the limitations of what AIs can and can't do when it comes to imagery. I learned this whole VR thing. And then, you know, maybe most importantly, like when I was creating these 10 images, the fact that it took an hour to get what I wanted for each one, like at first, and even when I was doing it, it didn't feel irritating exactly. I mean, it was like, oh boy, this took a lot more time than I thought it would. But you know what ended up happening is that I'd had like an hour of interactive meditation on each of my goals, right? Like I spent an hour
thinking about time with it.
I wanted to be going to the theater, and I like got my playbills out and looked at how they were laid out, and I was on the playbill website. And so like if I had just written, I mean, I started by just writing down the list of 10 goals, and that took me like an hour to think about, but then I spent like an hour thinking about them, and now I look at them every day for the next month. And for me, this was really a useful lesson in how we think and need to change how we think about prompting, which is we think about prompting as like, oh, it's so annoying if I can't get the answer right away. Oh, it's so annoying if I have to give it a long prompt. Oh, it's so annoying if I have to do a chain of thought prompt to teach it how to think. But what we forget is that like these aren't gumball machines where you're trying to drop in a quarter and get the best prize.
Yeah.
Right? I love Ethan Mollick's thing of it's a co-intelligence. And the co means we change too. We evolve too. And so the prompting process that takes time isn't just, oh, it takes so long to make the AI do the thing. It takes me so long. I'm learning. I'm evolving. Yeah. I'm reflecting on my actual goals, my thought process, my value. And encouraging us to reflect on what we're trying to accomplish is, to my mind, as valuable as the output and that toy we get from the gumball machine.
And so that is really the call to action for everyone, is not just to use these tools, but also think differently about the relationship between us and the tools and work itself. I love that. Beautiful. Thank you so much for being on today, and I definitely have to do another one.
This was lots of fun. Nice to see you.
Thank you for joining us today for an enlightening conversation with Dr. Alexandra Samuel about harnessing AI to reshape the future of work. These are some key insights that you can implement in your company. Number one, act now. As Alex shared, the typical way of adopting technology, where a company collects requirements, tests things, rolls it out, that doesn't work for AI. By that time, the robots would have taken over. So move fast and especially start experimenting. Alex suggests to find some people who are already using AI and tap them to have teams innovate together. Number two, create a culture of AI. Alexandra stressed the importance of organizational culture in adopting AI and how we need to define our relationship with AI, how it's used, for example, in making it a norm to summarize handover materials before sending, have discussions internally, and create agreements between people about when and where to use AI. As Alex says, make AI not just legitimated, but expected. Number three, let people experiment. A really important way to get people to use AI more is to let them experiment, as we also saw in the Moderna and Microsoft case studies. Make time available to figure out how to automate your own work and make it clear that it's okay to do so. At the same time, reassure people that this is not about losing their jobs. And number four, ensure to close the gap. As Alex shared already, some people are using AI a lot, and for some people, AI is still very new and used infrequently. As AI evolves, that could create a gap between employees. Ensure to close that gap, putting efforts into equal understanding and time spent with AI tools for all. Get everyone to get the benefits of, for example, being really good at using the ChatGPT voice feature, which is a game changer. This will be a huge benefit because, as Alex says, profound changes come when you develop that capacity as an organization or a team. And Alex's call to action, AI is a co-intelligence. And the co means that we change too. We evolve too. So rethink your relationship with AI. By leveraging these insights and integrating these tactics, you can facilitate smoother AI adoption and ensure your organization remains at the forefront of this innovation and workplace efficiency. Join me again next week when I interview Amber Wenner, the CEO of Vet, which combines humans and AI in the quest for better and fairer candidate screening. Subscribe for updates at flexos.org/futurework.